Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The International Fellows Program at the U.S. Army War College at the Carlisle Barracks has graduated more than 1,700 students from dozens of countries around the world. 66 of them went on to become the chief of their nation's military service, or chief of defense. Two who graduated from the program are now heads of state. So what do they study, and what's the program's purpose? Joining us today is Colonel Robert Connolly of the United Kingdom. Colonel Connolly, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Also understand that you are the president of the class, so we will speak about that as well. Also joining us is Colonel Elizabeth Mikkelsen of Norway. Colonel Mikkelsen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Kevin Bremer, Deputy Director of the International Fellows Program at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle. Mr. Bremer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Kevin Bremer, I want to start with you. Describe the International Fellow Program.
Well, currently the program invites 80 officers, typically from 80 countries. This year we have 76 officers from 73 countries. Sometimes countries have funding issues right at the very last minute, so we end up dropping a seat or two. But there is a quota currently for 80. They come here for a year, some a bit longer if they go through the academic preparation course, but typically a year, June to June.
So what is the purpose of the program?
The purpose is threefold, actually. The chief of staff of our Army reaches out to his counterpart in whatever country, invites them to send in a qualified officer. Basically, obviously, we're an academic institution, so they study for a year, strategic studies. The second leg, or the second purpose, if you will, is also to allow them to build relationships, not only within the International Fellows class, but their U.S. counterparts. And lastly, it's an opportunity to learn about the United States, its institutions, its culture, its people.
And why is that important?
We all have to have a general understanding of each other, otherwise we wouldn't be able to work closely with each other. We believe that the International Fellows Program at the Army War College provides that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So when you said that those who are participating strategic studies, what does that mean?
Well, there's clearly a tactical level of operations and operational level of war, but at the strategic level, we're talking corps commanders and above, Army commanders, theater commanders, or staff of those commanders. They're tackling strategic problems that may or may not have a right or wrong answer. It's just a problem, and you're coming up with courses of action to attack that problem.
Does that include real-time situations around the world, or is it history? Is it maybe a scenario that has been dreamed up?
All of those. So, yes, they're at the curriculum at the Army War College, for instance, the officers will study historical aspects of strategic leadership and strategic campaign planning. So there's the historical part of that, as well as current operations, what's happening currently, as well as planning for the future, 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Are these all, these nations that are involved, are they all American allies?
Yes.
Okay. I people probably hear that and say, that's a dumb question, Scott. But, you know, when you're talking about that many nations, you know, there are some that the United States may have had issues with in the past, but they are still invited, correct?
If there's a military-to-military cooperation existing currently, they are likely to be invited.
Okay. But there are, of those nations, there are some that have actually fought wars against each other in the past, correct? I mean, Israel, for example, there are probably four different countries that Israel in the past has been in combat with. They see Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, that, you know, that there are, not everyone has been an ally, may have been an ally with the United States, but maybe not with each other.
And that's the beauty of the program, because they'll actually spend a year side by side, and they get to know one another throughout that whole year. I can probably name several instances where the Pakistani Brigadier General and the Indian Brigadier General have become very good friends over the course of the year, or the Israeli and maybe one of the other countries that are typically not friendly toward Israel. But the two officers have a better understanding. They actually talk, which is something that the program really, really goes after.
Do you know whether that's actually had an impact in the relationship between those two nations? When I say those two nations, meaning if we have two officers.
I'm sure there are. I mean, I don't have specifics, but I can tell you that when we bring officers back for the induction into the Hall of Fame, for instance, one of the constant things that are always remarked upon is the relationships they built, not only with their U.S. counterparts, but more specifically with their international friends. Mm-hmm. And some of those friends, they built that friendship while they were here.
Colonel Connolly, you are a colonel in the Army of... by the way, what is the official name of the military branch of military service that you're in?
I'm in the British Army, so I'm an infantry officer.
Okay, all right. See, I was expecting this long title, and you're in the British Army Infantry.
Yes, I am. I joined a regiment many, many moons ago called the King's Own Scottish Borderers, if that satisfies
you. All right,
yeah,
there we go. See, in America, we're used to hearing that.
Yeah, no, the King's Own Scottish Borderers, but that has subsequently been sort of amalgamated into what is now the Royal Regiment of Scotland, and on promotion to colonel, you leave that and join the general staff. But I'm still a British Army infantry officer in its simplest form.
Have you seen action?
I've served in Northern Ireland, Iraq, Afghanistan. In terms of recent deployments, I've been in Israel for the last year, although that is not in action, so to speak. But I've had my fair share of travel around the world.
How long have you been in the service?
I commissioned from the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst at the end of 1995, so 23 years now.
And we talked before the program, you have been in the United States before. Why did you want to participate in this program?
I think this is a tremendous opportunity for the United Kingdom. America is a key ally. And to understand the way that your senior leaders think in terms of the way that they approach problems at the strategic level is absolutely essential for us. This is one of a number of courses that we send students to from the UK. It is an opportunity for us to meet colleagues who we will inevitably bump into in the future, in both professionally and socially. And I think it just builds those relationships in terms of understanding background, culture, to allow us to better work together as we move forward.
I'm curious, when you say that to get a better understanding of the thinking of American military leadership, is it any different than British?
Well, I think all... on an individual level, inevitably.
Right, right.
I think that when you look at the doctrine that both nations use, it doesn't particularly differ significantly. I was in the campaign planning part of the ISAF mission in Afghanistan, working with six US planners, and our approach to the strategic campaign plan there was extremely similar because of the way that we've been taught over the years. But inevitably, people's culture and background will take them down lines of questioning that it's important that we understand. And so, a lot of the things that we've been doing since we arrived, particularly on this IF induction course, are about getting to understand
IF, what is
International Fellow.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
This International Fellow induction course is about getting to understand American culture and background and where it all started, because that allows us to better understand the way that people think. And that's important.
I want to talk about that a little bit later in the program, but now I want to turn to Colonel Elizabeth Mikkelsen of Norway. Colonel, let's talk kind of the same questions that I asked Colonel Connolly. How long have you been in the service?
I've been in the Army for 25 years, so it's been a while.
And you just said that you are in the Army. How large is Norway's military?
In total, I think we will have around 15,000 active duty, and we will have approximately 52,000 reserves. So it's not that big, but Norway is a small country also.
Well, what are the main duties of the Norwegian military?
We will have operations planned for both inland Norway, mainly exercise in peace times. But we will join our allies for operations abroad. So we have people all around the world. It's not that many in numbers, but they are all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And you also have been in Israel for the past year or so, or is longer?
No, I've not been to Israel, but I've been to Iraq and
Afghanistan. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I misinterpreted what... Okay, I got the two of you confused. But you have been in Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's right, yes, together with our allies. And that's a good experience. And it's important for Norway as a small country to have good relationships with our allies. So it's therefore also we try to stretch as long as we can to join you.
When you say that you have served alongside your allies, in what capacity? A combat capacity
My profession is logistics, so I will make sure that they have all the equipment and stuff they need and go along with that. So I have not been in combat. No, I have not.
Mm-hmm. But you see, I think that's important for our audience to understand, is that when they think of logistics, they're thinking that equipment, the personnel is coming from just the U.S., when this is an international effort in both Afghanistan and Iraq, now Iraq winding down, but that both international and providing logistical support for all the allies. A lot of Americans, probably that's something that they didn't know.
No, that's true. And actually, I just came from an important job planning to be a host nation for the largest NATO exercise in recent years, being in Norway this autumn, Trident Juncture. 40,000 soldiers on Norwegian soil, that means a lot of preparation for a whole Norwegian society, not only the military. There will be a lot of traffic on the roads. All the harbors, all the air ports will be included in this. The health system, everything will be included.
Now, obviously, you can't give a lot of information about the planning for that, but what does a military exercise, when it involves NATO nations, what does that look like?
It's a lot of planning. It's done by one of the NATO headquarters, so it will be involving all the NATO countries participating and also the partner nations. It's a comprehensive planning, and it will take years to do that. So we started back in 2016, and exercise have not yet been done. It will take place this autumn. So it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of preparation together with our allies, and that's the way this kind of exercises is good, because then we can prepare for the real operations.
Colonel Connolly, how important are exercises like that?
I think in order to be genuinely interoperable as NATO, we must always exercise together. You cannot, it would be like pulling in a load of football players from different teams across the league and saying, right, you're going to play the Super Bowl champions next week.
Oh, so you're talking about American football.
Yeah. No, not soccer. No, the same analogy would work. But you need to practice in order to be interoperable, and that interoperability comes with running these exercises. So they're incredibly important to the way that NATO operates.
Mm-hmm. Have you participated in exercises like that?
I haven't, in fact. No, my career has taken me down certain paths. I've worked with the Americans, but not at the NATO level that Elizabeth is talking about now.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing the International Fellows Program at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle. 1,700 students from dozens of countries around the world have graduated from this program. 66 of them went on to become their nation's chief military, the chief of their military service or chief of defense. There's a lot of people, a lot of names maybe you would even recognize that have gone through this program over the years. Our guest today, Colonel Elizabeth Mikkelsen of Norway, Colonel Robert Connolly of the United Kingdom, he's also the International Fellow Class President, and Kevin Bremer, Deputy Director of the International Fellows Program at the U.S. Army War College. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Not every day you get an opportunity to speak with someone in the military that is not American, not from the United States, and it's a good opportunity. Maybe you have some curiosity questions. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. You could send it to smarttalk@wytf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Helga in Lancaster. Helga, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, and that's Hilda.
It's Hilda?
How are you?
Sorry.
And I would love to thank the program. Programs like this and NPR News are my free education that I rely on, especially in the evening time when we go world, and I hear those beautiful accents. The young lady from Norway, I was so excited to hear that you're from Norway. I have recently heard on the program concerning two exemplary prisons in Norway, and I would love to learn more about that someday. But then when I heard what you're talking about the military, it brings to mind discipline, and I'm all about discipline. I'm retired. I live here in the community now. I'm giving back to the community, and I was just wondering, how is it that, or do the officers or the gentlemen and women that go into this program, do they have to have military background?
Thank you very much for your call. Everyone involved, and Kevin Bremer, let me ask you, everyone involved, military?
Yes, they're either serving officers or in our distance education program, we've actually have a fair number of representation of civilians who actually work in their Minister of Defense.
Mm-hmm. You have a distance learning program?
Yes, there's a resident program and a distance program, the resident program being a year and the distance program, same curriculum over a two-year period.
Mm-hmm. Colonel Mikkelsen, she was talking about the prisons in Norway, and that's not your specialty, so I won't ask you about that, but she was talking about discipline in the military, and you know, again, here in the United States, people think of those who are serving as being very disciplined. I imagine it's the same in the Norwegian military.
Well, I think one of the things which set you up to be a military is that you like discipline, because it's the way it works. You have to take orders and you have to give orders.
You like discipline. Did you like it when you were going through basic training?
Yeah, I like discipline. but the way, actually, I've been seeing that your elementary school and middle school, where my boys will actually be attending, is more disciplined than the schools in Norway. So I think we have some cultural differences, and you are in a country with great discipline regarding to that, at least, mm-hmm. as far as I've seen.
Colonel Connolly, I saw you nodding your head when she said discipline, and you kind of raised your eyebrows like you were surprised.
No, I think discipline has a number of meanings, and in many cases, the military nature of discipline is about the discipline to do certain things when you are tired, when you're wet, when you're hungry. The discipline to ensure that your weapon is working correctly before anything else. The discipline to ensure that you take on food before you go to sleep. And all of these things, a lot of people think about discipline and think about people being told off, and that's not necessarily what military discipline is about. So I think it's important to make that distinction when you're talking about the word. But without a doubt, I think that we are disciplined in the military. We need to be in order that the system works under pressure. And there are very few organizations that are pressure tested to the extent that all of our militaries are.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both mentioned about children. And Kevin Bremer, you talked about being acclimated to the United States and learning about the culture. Both of you have visited the United States before, but now that you've been here about a month involved in this program, and we'll get on to the family life, but what are your thoughts, Colonel Mickelson, being in this program for about a month?
It's been so far an unique experience because I have a lot of people from around the world, which I have some of them I have learned to know, and not all of them because it's a lot of people. And it's good to have different kind of discussions with them, learn their families to know how their life is back home, what they think about coming here. And also I have been meeting up with my sponsors, a very nice couple from Carlisle, which have been introducing us to the American society in a very good way. Mm-hmm. So we had a good experience so far, and I think it will just get better and better.
Those conversations that you've had with other officers, what have you learned?
Well, it's different things. I learned that we are basically the same. We like the same things. We have a unique opportunity to come here, take a year off, connect with our families, take care of ourselves, learn English, as for my part is important. And the basics are the same. It's different cultures, it's different places in the world, it's different perspective on how you see things. But basically, we have some common foundation, which is important to know.
What about your introduction to American society? You mentioned your sponsors. Your thoughts on that, your observations?
Well, I think you are a very proud people. You like your roots a lot. We have been arriving in an important time. You have had the 4th of July. We have learned about your constitution down in Philadelphia. We have been down to Washington, seeing the White House, where the president is. And all this is important. You also have a great timing honoring your flag, being proud of who you are. And Beth and George, who are our sponsors, have been the best introducing us to this. And also the International Fellow Program have been taking us places, showing us the community, the major in Carlisle, everything like that. It's very nice. And the culture here is, you're very open-minded, including...
We're open-minded?
Yeah, I think you are. Well, at least compared to Norwegians, you are, because that's maybe the one big difference between our countries. We are more closed, and you are more open-minded.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you talk to everybody. You include them. You want them to feel comfortable, get to know your country. Yeah, it's very friendly, and I think that's the part which make me sure that my boys will have a good time here. I think they will have some rough times, but yes, it will be good eventually.
Your boys, how old are your sons?
Oh, they are 9 and 13.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to be going to Carlisle schools?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. So starting in about 3 weeks?
Well, today they have their English tests, so yes, in the 20th of August they will start.
And they both speak English?
They both do, but on different levels.
In Norway, English is a required subject in school, correct?
That's true. We start learning English from the first grade.
Mm. Colonel Connolly, I want to ask a lot of the same questions of you in just a moment, but we have a question here from Stephen in Minersville. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hello. My question for the panel is, so their opinion on getting their security clearances pulled from political retaliation, you know, and potentially losing a resource.
Okay, being a little more specific, what do you mean about your security clearance is pulled for political reasons?
Oh, when the White House recently pulled those security clearances from former members of, you know,
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your call. I think I have an idea. Colonel Connolly, what about that? I think he's looking for opinions of, are you concerned at all about having security clearances pulled if you say something that doesn't agree with, the Trump administration or something like that?
I think inevitably the U.S. needs to, as all countries do, protect its level of security as it sees fit, and that is something that that it will seek to do as things transpire. But the course that we are on at the moment is not one where we will be going into specific areas that are of high classification. And therefore, I would not perceive over the next 12 months an issue of security clearance. In terms of how we talk about things while we're here, the course is, as openly said, we are here to challenge, we are here to question. That, I don't think, needs to conflict with policies. It hopefully will allow us to understand them better, because when we ask questions that potentially take us down a route that people might disagree with, then that's an opportunity for them to explain why, as opposed to be concerned about security clearances, so to speak.
And for the most part, that's not done publicly anyway, right?
No, that's correct. Yeah.
I mean, it is in the in a classroom setting.
Within the confines of a lecture theater or auditorium.
Right. Yeah. Kevin Brummer, has that ever been an issue?
No, the entire course is unclassified. There's not a portion of the course where they delve down into any kind of classified material. So the idea is, as Rob had just mentioned, is the conversation that they have about specific issues. And the great beauty of this program, the International Fellows Program, is that Americans tend to be pretty myopic and very American in their thought. The International Fellows bring in different points of view and different ways of viewing a particular problem that actually open up the eyes and the minds of our American students as well.
So, Colonel Connolly, I'm going to ask the same questions, many of the same questions I asked Colonel Mickelson. You've been in the United States before, so
that's right.
I don't think there are a lot of surprises, but your month here, observations?
It's been a tremendous opportunity. My father worked for Mobil Oil, so I have grown up in the U.S. system, so to speak, to a certain extent. Though I hadn't lived in the U.S., I've been in Fort Lewis, and I've worked in Washington prior to this for different periods at a time. But I think in this month, the exposure we've had to how the government works, with the executive, the legislative, the judicial, how that comes together, how it was separated deliberately, I think has been fascinating, both for me and, in fact, my wife and children, because they're at an age, 16 and 14, where they're actually interested in how this works. So the opportunity to go back, and of course, you know, if you go back to independence, if you go back, go then forward to the Constitution, how it all fits together is integral to our understanding of the U.S. And how it's evolved subsequently since then. So it's been a fantastic opportunity to see two beautiful cities, to experience those on both a learning and a simply visiting level, just to look at things. It's already been, if this is the prequel to the next 11 months, then we are absolutely very much looking forward to it.
Now, your wife and children are not going to stay for school, correct?
So my children won't stay at school. My wife will stay with me.
Oh, okay.
They go to school and they fly out for various holidays, but they'll be out in October and in December and all the way through the year.
You went to Philadelphia,
that's right,
as you mentioned, and history is a part of that.
Yep.
Was the war, American War for Independence, studied at all?
Yes, we
and
we,
what mistakes did the British make in that?
where would you like me to start?
I'm joking with you.
No, I know. I think it's very interesting, because we've looked at a number of of conflicts since we've been here, and you asked Kevin earlier about those nations that are here that have been part of those, and there are a number of us, so it's something that's raised its head on a number of occasions. We can't run away from history; it is what it is, and it's been interesting to see a very balanced approach. When we were in Philadelphia, we went to the National Constitution Center and received an extremely good presentation on the history right through the Civil War up until now. So I think it's been fascinating and very balanced.
So I asked Colonel Mickelson about her observation about Americans. Your observations?
I think having grown up in an environment where the majority of our family friends were American, means that mine haven't fundamentally changed. Americans are extremely generous, and I think that that is one of the things that has been reinforced. We were with the Hershey Rotary Club yesterday, and the generosity of all the groups that we've met has been quite overwhelming. And as you mentioned, as the class president, I've been asked to say thank you on a number of occasions, and that comes very easily, because people go out of their way with their time. If they hear you speaking in a shop, they will engage and just say, "Hey, where are you from? What do you do?" And as Elizabeth said, that wouldn't happen probably in Norway, and it certainly wouldn't happen in the UK. I've been told my accent is cute. It was an interesting observation. I think generous is the way I'd put it.
Well, that's good to hear. I want to talk about attitudes toward America in your countries, not just your observations in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Colonel Robert Connolly of the United Kingdom, Colonel Elizabeth Mickelson of Norway, and Kevin Bremer, Deputy Director of the International Fellows Program at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle. Our phone number, if you have a question or a comment, is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have an email here from James who says, these programs are truly impactful. Across our war colleges every year, there are Saudis and Israelis, Greeks and Turks, Argentines and Brits, Indians and Pakistanis, and many others. They don't all graduate sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya and trusting each other's countries, but they do leave thinking, you're okay. Often lifelong friendships form that years later allow a classmate to call a classmate, now their nation's service chief, and ask, what the heck is going on over there, diffusing tensions which could otherwise have led to conflict. And that sounds like someone who has experience with the program, Kevin.
Sounds like it, because he just nailed it. The relationships that are built during the course of the year become real key down the road. We've had probably countless examples of a U.S. officer reaching out to his international fellow counterpart. May not have been from the same class, but they have that same war college experience, and basically saying, you know, what the heck's going on over there? Mm.
So want to talk about today. Colonel Mickelson, you said that Americans being open-minded, and I kind of raised an eyebrow when you said that, because right now the United States, politically, there's a lot of division in the United States. I'm sure that many people around the world have seen, some of the divisiveness that we've had in this country. And, you know, we hear in our news reports that many countries around the world do not see the United States as the leader of the free world like it once did, or that the criticisms by President Trump of NATO, for example, that has not gone over very well amongst some of the allies. Colonel Connolly, let me just ask the situation in Great Britain, view of the United States. I mean, I know we're talking about millions of people and you can't answer for everyone, but has there been an attitude change toward the United States? How do Brits view the United States?
I think fundamentally we still see the United States as a key ally, and I don't think that that will change. All countries, irrespective of their size, outreach, power, if you will, have a political system that is their political system, and so whilst the US may consider itself to be in a position it perhaps hasn't been for a while, we still see the US as a key ally, and I don't think that's changed. And on the on the person to person level, I don't see any fundamental change at all.
Mm-hmm. And the person-to-person, that seems as though if we could have more of those person-to-person conversations, there wouldn't be the divisiveness that we have now. Let's take a phone call from Debbie in Wellsville. Debbie, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I wanted to ask about the strategic studies. If you actually delve into civil uprisings prior to them becoming wars, if there's strategy behind that, such as when Hitler, before that became a world war. In the United States, with the divisiveness that's going on right now, I think there's a potential of a possibility that it could lead into a civil, some type of disagreement. And so I'm just wondering if you look at the strategy in civil uprisings and how to deal with that prior to becoming full-blown wars.
Thank you very much for your call. I think what she's asking involves some history, but it also involves what's happening currently. Colonel Mickelson, what about that as you're looking into strategies? Do you look at that, what led to the conflicts that actually resulted in violence?
I think we will start the program in the seminars next week, and then we will go into both the histories, discussing the previous wars, what was the ends in the, what was the mission, what was the target of the military involvement, learn from the mistakes, discussing the new areas who could be in trouble places. And that will be interesting because we will have this different perspectives from around the world in the discussions, and I think we will all go back much more experienced and have a good fundamental in that, and we will also have a good network, as you said previously, making that phone call just to make a bigger understanding what actually is going on.
Kevin Brummer, the question she raises is a good one, because in strategic studies, we think, and you described it earlier, but we're thinking of battle strategies and strategy used by the military. But what about the factors that did lead up to, well, for example, she provided a perfect example of Europe before World War II. Is that part of what the international fellows will study?
Yes, throughout the year there will be concentrations on history. In fact, their core courses very early in the program are almost all centered on different parts of history and the strategic lessons learned from that. Getting back to her, the civil-military relations or relationships, that is discussed in great deal as well. So yes, taking those lessons learned, if you will, from different conflicts, what brought them from just being a more localized to then more a regionalized conflict will be studied as well.
One of the things that's always impressed me when I've had an opportunity to speak with students from the U.S. Army War College is that knowledge of history. That is a big part. That that cliche of repeating history if you don't learn from it. But this is actually an academic exercise for those who attend the U.S. Army War College, that you do learn the strategies, you do learn from the history of what's led up to this. I'm just curious, are there instances, Colonel Connolly, that you in particular are interested in of different times in history throughout the world, maybe that America was involved in, maybe not, maybe some of the other nations that you've always been curious about the strategy or something you'd like to learn more about?
I don't think there's anything specific in as much as we will do a vast amount of reading over the next sort of 12 months. And over that period, there will be various lessons, you know, pertaining to the question, you know, those key indicators as you lead up to certain things, the warning signs, if you will. And I don't think that this course is about looking at anything specific. It's about being able to draw together the collective understanding of all of those different types of things and meld them into something that you can actually apply in the future. Because whilst we can learn lessons from the past, we're not there, and we need to draw those things forward, put them all into the melting pot together, and actually be able to apply them as we move forward. I personally am interested in the Middle East region, and I would like to do the Middle East Studies program because I think it's such a key area of the world that has the potential to drift into other areas, and that is something that I've always been interested in since I was a child. So I see this as a great opportunity to follow up on that.
Now, you have been in Israel. How long were you in Israel?
So I was there for 12 months. I moved from Israel directly to, well, I went via the UK and then came straight out to the US.
Mm-hmm. So what were you doing in Israel, and what did you observe there?
So I was working with the United States Security Coordinator. It's a small three-star US headquarters that's based with the Consulate General in Jerusalem, and we were working in conjunction with the Israelis and the Palestinians to improve the security situation there. And so it was a very interesting period in terms of understanding the dynamics of the area. You have a whole range of countries that play into that. And so that again just sort of, you know, garnered my interest for the future.
What don't most people know about that region, Israel in particular, and relationship with the Palestinians? I mean, from the images we see on TV, it seems like it's a constant daily battle. And by battle, I don't mean the classic sense of guns being fired, but, you know, protest and that kind of thing.
I think fundamentally people want it to work. They want a solution.
When you say people, Israeli and Palestinians.
Israelis and Palestinians would wish to live in peace. Who wouldn't? There will always be disagreements. There are disagreements in the UK. There are disagreements in the US. There are disagreements all over the world. I think that what you see on TV distills it into something quite specific on any given day. But I think the focus is people moving forward and trying to find a solution to the problem.
There are many who feel that region is very dangerous. Did you ever feel in danger there?
No, I didn't. And my family came out to visit me while I was there. And at no time during their visit did I feel that they were in danger either. So I have to say I have nothing but a good experience of the 12 months that I was there. Incredibly beautiful place as well.
But you were in, and I just want to make the point that, you know, it's not like there is potential danger everywhere in that region, but, you know, along West Bank and, you know, some of the hot spots. Is that where you were?
Yes, regularly. Mm-hmm. But again, at no stage, you know, did I feel major concern? Clearly, you know, I'm an army officer, and therefore I have experience of environments that are that are slightly, you know, more extreme. So my pitching of what is dangerous is perhaps different to other people's. But I think it was an extremely enjoyable year that gave me a tremendous insight into what is a very difficult problem, but I think one that people want to work towards a solution with.
Mm-hmm. Colonel Mickelson, you're in logistics, and I was just thinking about this, that 75th anniversary of D-Day coming up. In fact, I'm leading a WITF tour coming up next May, where we're going to London, Normandy, and Paris. logistics also, the new what used to be known as the New Cumberland Army Depot, which is just a few miles from Carlisle, one of the biggest logistical centers for the U.S. military here on the East Coast. So what can you learn about logistics here?
Well, I think it's important for me to understand how the American system works, because we have to cooperate a lot. At the moment, we have American equipment on Norwegian soil. We have the Marine Corps pre-positioning program in Norway. We have a lot of equipment in the caves in Norway. And we have up to battalion size Marine Corps rotational force there, actually. So we have to learn how the American system works and how we will should cooperate with them. And I think this is a very good way to do this, because we are in the center of how they will learn that part. And also we will have discussion with other logistics from around the world, but also the Americans.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the U.S. has one of the largest militaries in the world. Other countries that you think can learn from logistically? Is there a nation's military that has a reputation of being very good logistically? Probably the British.
Probably, I should say, having Rob by my side.
we don't want to have an international incident right here in the studio, you know. Find out that Norway and Britain are, the next day. But you think there are some things that you can take away from this?
Of course. I will learn about systems, where we have shortfalls, where you have where you're strong, how the system works. And it's important for us to understand, because you have all this combatant commands around, and it's important for us to deal with it in the right way.
So when you go back to Norway, and obviously you've got a big challenge coming up with the NATO war exercises in the fall, but when you go back, what are you hoping that you can take back with you?
I will have a unique network. It will be both Americans and people from around the world. I will have been discussed different kinds of issues with different perspectives, which I have not been able to do in Norway with only Norwegians attending. So I think I will have the perspective of the issues going around will improve, and that will be together with the network, the most important part, I think, for me professionally. And also because the way I see it, the U.S. is one of the most important allies. We have not changed the view on the Americans. It's interesting times, yes, but we have not changed the view. So I think we will continue with NATO as the fundamental and bilaterally with U.S. Mm-hmm. So it will be a good year. In that way.
Colonel Connolly, what do you want to take back to Britain?
I think as a key ally, it's that broad understanding of how business is conducted, the thought processes behind it. I already have a good feel for that, but I don't think I will ever get exposed to such an eclectic group as we are going to be in the next few months, the 380 of us approximately. We'll break down into seminars, and I know that there's been a tremendous amount of work done to ensure that those seminars are from a broad bunch, broad set of disciplines, in order that our discussions, etc., will cover a range of experiences. So I think for me, you could do the reading that we're going to do in isolation, but what you can't do is have the discussions and meet with the people and that face-to-face engagement where you really, really start to learn.
Kevin Bremer, we only have a minute or so left. I want to thank you very much for all three of you for being on the program today. What message would you like? What would you like the public to know about this program?
The program in and of itself is a real key strategic engagement program for our Army. Again, bringing in 76 officers from 73 different countries from all over the world, and the opportunity to build those relationships, for them to understand America, American institutions, American values. That's probably the biggest takeaway that I think this program brings.
Kevin Bremer is Deputy Director of the International Fellows Program, U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Colonel Robert Connolly of the United Kingdom, and Colonel Elizabeth Mikkelsen of Norway. Thank the three of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And good luck. Thank you. Coming up, I just wanted to mention this. Next Wednesday, another Smart Talk road trip. Beau's Dream, that's August 8th, next Wednesday. Smart Talk will celebrate the dog days of summer with a road trip to Beau's Dream Dog Park in Lancaster. Join us next Wednesday and discover how a dog's brain works. Get tips from an expert trainer and vet. Plus, meet a local woman and her dog who inspired Lancaster's dog park makeover. The event is free. Bring your favorite dog and a can of pet food to donate to local animals. Register today at WITF.org/events.